Hello to all of you on the internet, and welcome to the Astro Virtual Refresher course talk on flash radiation therapy. My name is Bill Liu. I'm faculty in the Department of Radiation Oncology at Stanford. These are my disclosures. For those of you who have not heard about flash, it is a relatively new concept that has been gaining attention, but it has been gaining attention quite rapidly. And in the past year, there have been multiple special sessions at various meetings, including ASTRO, AAPM, AACR, Radiation Research Society and Radiosurgery Society. There have been special workshops by the NCI and the Department of Energy. There was a special issue of the Green Journal, Radiotherapy and Oncology, covering a wide range of papers on flash. And there's currently a special issue of radiation research that's in preparation. So it is a topic that's been gaining a lot of attention recently because of the promise around it. But what is flash actually? And what it refers to is ultra-rapid radiation treatment. And in shorthand, we refer to flash in terms of the dose rate. A dose rate of at least 40 gray per second on average is what has been identified as a potential threshold for defining flash therapy. This is an oversimplification, most likely, but that is one simple way of understanding the speed that we're talking about. And this is, of course, orders of magnitude higher than the dose rates that we deliver in the clinic currently. And to clarify, almost all of what I'll be talking about is preclinical research, but based on the promise of it, it's been generating a lot of attention in terms of the potential for ultimate clinical translation. And so why do we care about flash in the first place? And this comes back to the very basic tenet of cancer therapy, regardless of the modality of therapy. Ultimately, one of the key factors that we must consider is therapeutic index. In other words, our ability to eliminate the cancer without causing excessive collateral damage. And this was verbalized or formalized by Holtison back in the 1930s in the context of radiation therapy and the dose response. So as you can see, as you give a higher and higher dose of radiation, the likelihood of destroying or eliminating the tumor increases up to a point until the tumor is essentially guaranteed to be destroyed. However, at the same time, the normal tissues also have a dose response. And at a certain dose, at some of these doses that are required to eliminate the tumors, we might run into a situation where the damage to normal tissues is excessive, and that would therefore limit our ability to cure the cancer. And so this principle holds whether we're talking about radiation therapy or drug therapy or surgery. Ultimately, our ability to cure cancer is limited by the collateral damage or the side effects that's caused by the treatment. And so anything that we can do to increase the separation between the normal tissue tolerance curve and the tumor destruction curve, that therapeutic index is going to be of great value. And that's essentially what we've always sought in radiation therapy. In the last several decades, we have achieved that by physical dose conformity, concentrating the radiation in the tumor and minimizing it in the surrounding normal tissues. But biological approaches to creating better therapeutic index are of great interest and something that we've only scratched the surface on in radiation therapy, fractionation being the kind of the original biological approach to increasing therapeutic index. So what do we know about the importance of dose rate in radiation therapy? Well, there are a lot of classical studies that have looked at doses or dose rates in the range from the range that you see, for example, in low dose rate brachytherapy, all the way up to what we consider a high dose rate in our current clinical treatments. And you can see here that by the classical understanding, as we increase the dose rate up to, in this particular data shown here, up to 7 gray per minute, which would be somewhere near the high end of what we deliver conventionally in the clinic, you can see that the tumor cell killing increases, at least up to a point. And as we reduce the dose rate, conversely, we also see a decrease in cell killing. And historically or classically, that's been attributed to intrafraction DNA repair. So as we protract the treatment, DNA repair can start to happen and decrease the effective impact of the dose that's being delivered. And some of you may recall that in the early days of IMRT, when delivering IMRT took a long time, such as sometimes 20 or 30 minutes to deliver a single fraction of IMRT, There was a lot of controversy about the potential reduction in biological effectiveness from that longer dose delivery. Ultimately, that did not prove to be a dominant clinical effect, and the dose conformity afforded by IMRT ultimately was a winning factor in its adoption, and thereby increasing therapeutic index. But there was this concern that slower or lower dose rate delivery would compromise cell killing. But at dose rates much higher than what we're talking about in this clinical range, by classical data, we would not expect any further increase or change in cell killing. But this paper that was published by investigators at the Institut Curie in Paris in Science Translational Medicine in 2014 reported a very surprising finding. And what we see on the left here is images of whole lung irradiation in mice. And we see on the left-hand column is without radiation, you see the tissue in the lung forming these nice air spaces. But with high dose single fraction radiation of 17 gray, you can see that after a 6-month period, there's dense fibrosis. And this is the expected reaction that you get with a high dose of radiation to the whole lung. The surprising finding was that the same dose of radiation given to the whole lung in a sub-second interval, and that's the column there labeled flash, produced almost no fibrosis. And using this flash delivery, it took almost double the dose to produce a similar amount of fibrosis as the conventional dose rate radiation. So that was a very remarkable finding of normal tissue sparing dose for dose when the radiation was delivered in this sub-second flash. And subsequently, multiple other studies have found a similar phenomenon in other settings. A group that came out of the Curie group at Lausanne University in Switzerland did this study of whole brain radiation in mice. And what we can see is in the control panel there, the hippocampus of the mouse brain, the red dots are newborn neurons. So there's normally neurogenesis going on in the hippocampus where there's new cells being formed. After a single fraction of 10 gray conventional dose rate whole brain radiotherapy, you can see that essentially all of that neurogenesis is obliterated. And this is a known finding. This is what we expect to see based on known preclinical experiments. However, the same dose of 10 gray given in a flash, what we see is relative preservation of neurogenesis. So there are newborn neurons still being formed at a lower rate than without any radiation, but clearly at a higher rate than after conventional dose rate, despite the same dose. And if you look in the bottom set of bars there, what that's showing is the impact by dose rate. So across the board there, those are 10 gray single fraction doses being delivered to the brain. The height of the bar refers to the cognitive performance of the mice. And on the left-hand side, the left-hand bar is no radiation. And you can see that at all of the dose rates exceeding 60 gray per second, all 10 gray radiation, you can see that the mice have equal cognitive performance to no radiation, whereas at 20 gray per second and below, which extends into the conventional dose rate range, you can see a clear decrement in the cognitive performance of mice. This is a known phenomenon that's well described, but the surprising thing is that at the higher dose rates, there was no detectable decrement in cognitive performance with flash. And you can see that at that 30 gray per second dose rate is where there's sort of that intermediate inflection point where that may be a threshold dose rate for seeing the flash effect. And these experiments were done using an electron linear accelerator that is able to produce very high dose rates when run at high current, provided that it's in a superficial depth as far as electrons can penetrate. And so you can treat deep into a mouse using these electron beams and do these sorts of experiments, but the same technique would not scale to human treatments of deep-seated tumors. Complementing this work is a study here, also in mice brains, that was done by a group at University of California at Irvine in collaboration with the group at Lausanne where the irradiations were done, analyzing the neuronal microanatomy after whole brain irradiation. And again, these are 10 gray doses, and you can see that without radiation, there's a very dense pattern of dendritic spines on the axons of these neurons in the hippocampus. Whereas after conventional dose rate radiation, you can see a dramatic thinning out of the dendritic spines. And so whether you measure it by the number of dendritic branches or the length of the spines or the area, you can see that there's a dramatic reduction with conventional dose rate irradiation, whereas there is preservation of dendritic spine density after flash radiation to the same dose. So we've seen in multiple different organ systems normal tissue sparing dose for dose with flash compared to conventional dose rate. But what about the effect on the tumor? Do we actually get a therapeutic index? And what's been seen in a number of studies, and this is going back again to that seminal paper by Favadon et al., where looking at multiple different tumor models, whether it was in nude mice or in immunocompetent mice, that the tumor control or tumor growth delay or the survival of the animals due to tumor growth was all equal between the conventional dose rate and flash. So flash did not compromise tumor control. And in fact, an important point here is that if you look at the highest doses that were delivered, the 25 to 28 gray, where the survival due to tumor progression was the highest, that could only be studied with flash because the conventional dose rate mice died from toxic effects. And so, again, highlighting the potential for increased therapeutic index and dose escalation using the flash delivery. And again, a publication from the Lausanne group showing in a different organ system and different species altogether. In the mini pig, we see on the left-hand side an experiment where six spots of high-dose radiation were delivered to the back of the pig using an electron beam, so impacting the skin, 28 to 34 gray in a single fraction. And you can see that several months after treatment, on the conventional dose rate side, we see necrotic pits where the high dose radiation was given, a late effect on the skin, whereas the same doses delivered in flash on the other side of the same animal showed just minimal depigmentation and no ulceration or necrosis. They conducted a clinical trial in cat patients with spontaneous squamous cell carcinoma of the nose. It was a dose escalation study, again using the electron beam and treating these superficial tumors, 25 gray to 41 gray in a single fraction in six cats. And five out of the six tumors were well controlled, which was higher than expected based on historical treatment for this type of tumor, presumably based on the high dose that was given. But the toxicity was minimal and limited in the late term only to hair loss or alopecia in the treated field. So again, suggestive of a therapeutic. Now at Stanford, we've been doing flash experiments preclinically in mice using an electron beam generated by a clinical linear accelerator. Here we can again produce very high dose rates by using beam currents that are similar to what would be used in photon mode, but without a photon conversion target. So using the electron beam directly, here we use a 16 MeV electron beam, and placing the mouse very close to the scattering foil so that there's little divergence of the beam. And so it's very important to characterize the dosimetry of these experiments so that we know a gray is a gray and that the dose is uniform as expected. And so we did careful dosimetric characterization to show, in this case, whole brain radiotherapy was uniformly delivered throughout the whole brain volume. Similar to the Irvine and Lausanne groups was that with flash, there was preservation of cognitive function relative to conventional dose rate irradiation. And when we looked at histologically, what we found was a substantially decreased intensity of neuroinflammation with flash compared to conventional dose rate. So if you look here, those green staining cells are CD68 positive activated microglia, so inflammatory cells around the hippocampus of the brain. And it's a known phenomenon that after a single high dose of radiation, microglial activation goes up dramatically, and long-term, for essentially indefinitely, there's elevated neuroinflammation that correlates with cognitive decline in the mice. Whereas we see here with the flash-irradiated mice, there was substantially less neuroinflammation. And similar to what the Irvine group showed when we looked at the neuromicroanatomy at the dendritic spine density, it was significantly decreased with the conventional dose rate irradiation, but not with the flash delivery with the same dose. Using the same system, we've also looked at the impact on abdominal radiation. Designed a shield for abdominal radiation and stereotactic positioning of the mice. Again, doing careful dosimetry to show that's comparable and uniform dose distributions throughout the entire volume of the whole abdominal radiation. And this is a collaboration with my colleague Aaron Rankin, who is studying an ovarian cancer model in mice. And what we see here is that after whole abdominal radiation to a high dose of 16 gray, if you look at that panel on the right, the survival curve, the survival of mice after 16 gray essentially goes to zero within about 10 days because of acute GI syndrome. That's the expected reaction with conventional dose rate irradiation. But the same dose given in flash, 90% of the mice survive. So that's a dramatic difference in terms of toxicity. You can see that both groups of mice lost weight acutely, but the mice treated with flash recovered after about a week to normal levels, whereas the conventional mice all died. When we look at the microanatomy at the stem cell compartment, the crypts in the small bowel, that there was a preservation of regenerating crypts in the flash irradiated mice. And then on the bottom right-hand panel there, what we see is that those mice given flash irradiation after they recover, long-term after they recover, histologically they look indistinguishable from unirradiated mice. So those that recover, recover completely. What we also found was that when we give a slightly lower dose, a sublethal dose of 14 gray, whether it's conventional or flash, all the mice recover, but you can see a clear functional difference where the conventional dose rate mice, because of GI syndrome, get diarrhea, and so they make much fewer formed stools, whereas that's the formed stool production is preserved in the mice that got flash, and again, number of regenerating crypts was preserved in the mice that receive flash compared to the conventional. But again, we care about what happens to the tumors, and in this model where we see peritoneal implants from ovarian cancer cells, those mice, you can see the left-hand bar, without radiation, there was a high burden of peritoneal disease, but after 14 gray of conventional dose rate or flash, there was an equal level of tumor suppression. So the tumor growth was not compromised by flash. The group at University of Pennsylvania did a very similar study looking at flash irradiation of the abdomen. And in this case, they used a proton pencil beam. So they used a high-energy proton beam, treating on the plateau portion of the dose curve, so through and through the width of the mouse, treating the entire abdominal cavity. And they found, like we did, a preservation of regenerating crypts with flash relative to the standard rate proton beam therapy. Similarly, when they looked at subcutaneous implanted tumors, this was a pancreas tumor cell line, they found equal tumor growth delay with flash versus standard dose rate proton therapy. And so they were able to generate a very high dose rate of protons in a single pencil beam by turning up the current on the cyclotron. And so this is possible to do within small treatment volumes like a pencil beam treatment of a mouse. While most studies have shown equal tumor control effectiveness between flash and conventional dose rate irradiation, one might imagine that there could be a tumor type dependency on that. And so far, we have not seen any data in which flash produces reduced tumor control. There are a couple examples, and here's preliminary data showing one, where in this case, Lewis lung carcinoma implanted subcutaneously in syngeneic C57 black 6 mice, so immune competent mice. Showed this effect here, where the blue curve is the growth without any radiation, so tumor growth is progressing out of control. The red curve shows tumor growth delay caused by conventional dose rate irradiation as expected, and the green is even more tumor growth delay after flash irradiation to the same dose. And you can see that when we looked at immune cell infiltration into the tumors after 24 to 72 hours post-irradiation, in the flash irradiated tumors, there was in fact an increased infiltration by CD4 and CD8 T cells, and particularly by NK cells, suggesting an interaction with anti-tumor immunologic response. And again, another group, this is the group from Cincinnati Children's Hospital, using their proton beam facility, did a similar study in the same tumor model, Lewis lung carcinoma. This was an orthotopic model in the mouse lung, showing that overall the conventional dose rate and flash irradiation produced equal levels of tumor growth delay. Interestingly, in the subgroup of male mice, the tumor control was superior with flash compared to conventional dose rate. But in both the males and the females, what they saw was, in terms of immune cell infiltration, again, the T-cell populations were most increased in the flash-irradiated tumors compared to the conventional dose rate irradiated tumors. So what are the mechanisms underlying this effect? And that remains an area of very active study. There's a number of possible hypotheses. One leading hypothesis is it has to do with radiochemical depletion of oxygen. And so this is a phenomenon that has been known for a long time. This is just one example showing killing of bacterial cells, but the same observations have been made in mammalian cells as well, where if you give an extremely high dose rate, 10 to the 9th or 10 to the 10th gray per second, and you give enough of a dose in a single fraction, you can, through free radical chemistry, you can deplete oxygen levels in the cells before oxygen has the chance to diffuse back in. And what happens is that over a certain amount of dose, you then reach an anoxic type of dose response, and so there's better cell survival. It turns out that at least by modeling studies, so a number of groups have done modeling studies looking at this, that the same phenomenon might happen at lower dose rates, at the dose rate range that we're now referring to as flash, in the in vivo setting, where because of vasculature and circulation, there can be a longer time for oxygen diffusion into the tissues. Just one piece of suggestive evidence for this was a study done, again, preclinically in whole brain irradiation by the Lausanne group again, where you see here cognitive preservation of flash relative to conventional dose rate irradiation. But when the mice were breathing almost 100% oxygen, the cognitive sparing by flash was diminished. Suggestive of the importance of the oxygen tension. So in summary, what we have is across multiple studies, what's been observed is normal tissue sparing with flash compared to conventional dose rate irradiation. And this has been seen in multiple organ systems and across multiple mouse strains and even multiple species. Whereas there has been equal or better tumor killing in vivo, again, in multiple tumor models. What about translation of this to humans? What's the potential there? There has been a first-in-human case report. This was done by the Lausanne group using the electron linear accelerator that they have used for their mouse experiments. And with a superficial depth penetration of the electron beam, skin tumors could in principle be treated. And in fact, the first patient was treated palliatively for a refractory skin lesion from cutaneous lymphoma. With a single fraction of 15 gray delivered in 90 milliseconds in the flash treatment, what they observed was minimal erythema as the highest grade of toxicity a couple weeks after treatment. And then 5 months after treatment, there was a complete response to the tumor with no skin toxicity. Illustrating at least proof in principle of the potential for an advantageous therapeutic index with flash in human patients. And so working on next generation technology is designed to enable flash radiation therapy to more general human cancer targets, in other words, deep-seated targets in the body and larger volume targets, using high-energy X-rays or photons. And so this is the concept being illustrated here of the phaser technology based on new linear accelerator technology capable of producing much higher beam current. What you see illustrated here is a near simultaneous delivery from multiple beam directions producing IMRT dose distributions and simultaneous with imaging at the same isocenter with high-speed volumetric CT imaging. Real multi-detector CT that's very fast as opposed to the cone beam CT that we often use in radiation therapy. So what's needed in order to achieve this is first of all, producing much higher beam currents using this new linear accelerator technology that I'll describe a little bit more, and then eliminating all the slow-moving parts of the system. So eliminating gantry motion by having multiple beam lines simultaneously irradiating, and eliminating the slow mechanical intensity modulation. With the much faster delivery, we can get better precision by eliminating the whole motion management problem, so the motion's effectively frozen. We may be able to realize the advantages, the biological advantages of flash. But we've also worked from the beginning to design these technologies with compactness in mind, so compactness and economy, so that it will be clinically practical and can address the global access issues for radiation therapy. And so the design of these components is such that the integrated system we anticipate would be able to fit within a standard cargo shipping container, which would be the most compact form factor of any treatment system currently. The next generation linear accelerator technology that we've been working on is a project in collaboration with colleagues at SLAC National Accelerator Laboratory. And this has actually been built and prototyped and shown to accelerate beam with the performance that was predicted by simulations. And so the novelty here is a new design of the accelerating cells and how radio frequency power is fed to them, so that the conversion of radio frequency power to beam acceleration is much, much more efficient. In terms of immediate next steps, we have now initiated a multi-institutional international collaboration to study flash radiation therapy between the groups you see here at Stanford, at Lausanne University, UC Irvine, Indiana University, and University of Iowa. The core components that we're working on is to take that linear accelerator technology that ultimately will be used for the phaser system, combined with an existing high-power commercial klystron as the power source, to produce a flash X-ray beam for preclinical flash research in mice. And using an X-ray beam, we're able to collimate it to produce conformal flash irradiation in mice, which is something that's currently not available. And so the concept here is that we would actually have a mouse positioning system that would provide rotation of the mouse for CT imaging and conformal multi-beam direction irradiation, all in a sub-second interval. It turns out that at the size of the mouse, we're able to rotate fairly rapidly, even up to 3 revolutions per second, while putting minimal G-forces on the mouse. We tested this concept. This is work by Ryan Koh and my group, where we used a custom mouse immobilization system and tested the stability of the mouse position under rotation. This was just a proof of concept test where we did CT images before and after rotation up to 3 revolutions per second, and found that you can see here the green and the red images overlay very well, and at the maximum there was less than a millimeter of misregistration induced by the rotation, so reproducible enough for stereotactic irradiation. In another direction, looking at how we might be able to more rapidly translate flash to the clinic, we asked the question, and this was a simulation study done by Dylan Breitkreutz, who is a medical physics resident at Stanford. If we took that same linear accelerator that we're currently building and powered it with the same commercial radio frequency power source for our preclinical system, would we be able to produce an electron beam directly of a high enough energy, so without X-ray conversion, to get a very high dose rate throughout a large volume of tissue in a human patient? And so we looked at if we could oppose 2 electron beams and collimate it to cover a whole brain field in a pediatric patient, could we do pediatric whole brain flash? And what we found was that using the accelerator design and the power source that that we're currently assembling together, we would be able to generate a high enough beam energy, even though it's not optimized for that purpose, to sort of hacking it, to get a very high dose rate. We could achieve even over 450 gray per second at the midplane of the brain, producing a very homogeneous whole brain dose that's comparable to what we get with 6 MV photons for whole brain irradiation. So again, a proof of concept of how we might be able to very economically and in a short term do clinical flash treatments, at least for limited indications, limited by the technology. So in summary, the take-home points are that ultra-rapid flash radiation has shown the potential for increased therapeutic index in multiple preclinical models, clinical translation of flash, and in fact human data, are really on the horizon, at least for selected clinical scenarios. We may be seeing within perhaps even the next year or so data from electron flash or selected situations with proton beam flash in human patients. But for our general cancer radiotherapy indications, treating deep-seated tumors with conformal radiation, we really do need radical new technologies, and those are being developed now. And of course, there's much, much more to study, both biologically, technologically, and clinically. So I'd like to thank you for your attention. Many people contributed to the work that I showed you, including more that don't even fit on this slide. So I'm thankful to many collaborators who have contributed to this work. Thank you for your attention, and we'll have a chance for live questions later in the session.